Hi there, this is Gina, and I've pre-recorded this week's reading and commentary. It is from the Jesus Trilogy, from the second book in the trilogy, which is Beliefs, Emotions, and the Creation of Reality. So that's what we'll be talking about today. Emotional wounding creates the deepest distortions in one's personal illusory reality, and therefore the greatest suffering. Emotional wounding takes the form of beliefs about yourself that create enormous pain and limit your possibilities, and therefore the potential for a happy and fulfilling life. Emotional wounding keeps you stuck in the lies your mind is producing and marching to the drumbeat of the ego, which is a drumbeat of fear, negativity, and not enough. The problem is that once these beliefs are formed, they aren't easily reshaped or erased. And once they're established, they tend to become self-fulfilling prophecies, which reinforces those beliefs. Consequently, what a child is told early on about himself or herself is crucial and will largely determine how happy and fulfilled he or she will be. If the messages were negative, that person will have to work to overcome that programming through awareness of it and a conscious attempt to reprogram those ideas. Because the illusion is not that easily seen through, this can take years of diligent effort. If the programming you received was detrimental and limiting, then that is the spiritual work you've been given. You are here to learn how beliefs create reality, and that starts with how your beliefs create the reality you are experiencing. If you receive difficult programming, it is not a mistake. It is what your soul signed up for, to learn to be a more conscious creator. What better way to learn to do that than to create something unpleasant? Suffering motivates people to create something better or to make the world a better place. So we see this time and time again. People who are wounded in childhood, who grew up in a dysfunctional family, that pain of that dysfunction, that pain of having the negative programming, forces them to seek a way out of that suffering. And in so doing, they find insight, information, and techniques for healing and transforming themselves, for becoming better people as a result. So the suffering often leads people to become healers or helpers of others who are suffering. And that is often the plan. The soul often chooses to come into a dysfunctional environment so that it has grist for the mill to develop in a certain way, a motivation to become a healer, a helper, a therapist, or simply to grow very quickly and deeply spiritually in this lifetime. So as a spiritual mentor and counselor, I've seen this time and time again. It seems that most of the people I talk with who are people on the spiritual path are people who have come from dysfunctional families and difficult upbringings. It deepens us. You know the saying, that which doesn't kill us makes us stronger. So whatever you have experienced in your childhood, it's best to see it as what your soul chose, because this allows you to move on, to move beyond it. Because usually the conclusions that a child comes to as a result of a dysfunctional environment keeps that person stuck in those negative beliefs and self-images, which makes it difficult for them to create a happy life and fulfill their potential. So it's really useful to be able to see that even your difficult, dysfunctional environment as a child was the right experience. It served a purpose, or it can serve a purpose. Some people are pulled down by it and become bitter, but that's the wrong lesson. You're meant to learn to overcome it, to get stronger, to tap into courage and strength and the resources you've been given to overcome these difficulties. And when you do that, you're capable of being a real helper to others who have experienced similar difficulties. So there is a method to this madness, a purpose behind our experiences, and it's important to see it this way, to reframe the negative stories, negative conclusions that we came to as a child, because it wasn't possible for us to see the bigger picture and to come to a positive conclusion when we were a child. We could only conclude that we were wrong, that there was something wrong with us if our parents treated us badly. We couldn't help it as a child, but as an adult, we can reframe our understanding of our childhood. We can then overcome and transform the negativity that resulted from our dysfunctional environment. So much growth is accomplished in the lifetimes when you receive detrimental programming. In such lifetimes, it is possible to grow by leaps and bounds, which is why a soul chooses difficult circumstances. Such lifetimes are a crash course in creation. If the learning is not accomplished in that lifetime, the learning continues in between lifetimes and into the next. How long it takes is no problem for the soul. I have a little personal story to share with you. It seemed that when my mother was dying, that she was in so much grief and bitterness over her life, that it seemed to me that she hadn't learned from this lifetime. And I was concerned about that. And when I asked inside, my guidance explained to me that it may appear, and it may even be true, that someone is not learning in a particular lifetime. But they can learn enormously when they leave the body and then review that lifetime on another plane and have the help that they need to learn from their experiences. And so I took great comfort in understanding that the soul continues to learn beyond the lifetime, so that even if it appears that someone isn't learning in a particular lifetime, they can still learn enormously from that lifetime once they're out of the body and have the help from their guides to learn what they needed to learn. It's easier when we're on the other side to learn. So let's take the example of the belief, I'm not worthy of happiness. This is a very common belief, although often unconscious. It's a real stopper because every time you approach feeling happy, your unconscious mind or the ego must sabotage that happiness or be proven wrong. Both conscious and unconscious beliefs beg to be proven correct because the ego, which is part of your programming, doesn't like to be wrong. Programming is, after all, programming, and it seeks to maintain itself any way it can. So this is an important point. If you have a negative self-image, your unconscious and your ego are going to try to maintain that negative self-image because a negative self-image is better to the ego than no self-image at all. It seeks to maintain whatever image you have of yourself, even if it's negative. One of the main ways the programming maintains itself is by filtering out evidence that contradicts the programming. The belief, I'm not worthy of happiness, ensures that you will filter out possibilities for happiness. This might mean that you don't seek out activities or relationships that would make you happy, because if you did, you would prove your programming wrong. Instead, you're likely to engage in relationships and activities, such as addictions, that don't make you happy, thereby fulfilling the edict of your programming. This all happens, of course, unconsciously, as no one purposefully seeks to create circumstances that will cause unhappiness. The illusion is very tricky, and one reason it is that it's generated and maintained unconsciously. For you to see through your personal illusory reality, you have to become aware of the workings of the unconscious mind and of beliefs that were formerly unconscious. You have to become aware of how you yourself and nobody else is creating your experience of reality and, to some extent, also creating your external reality by believing what you believe. The place to start in becoming more conscious of what the unconscious mind is up to is to become aware of what you believe, to become aware of the thoughts that run through your mind. Becoming aware of the beliefs that you are conscious of is the first step in unearthing unconscious beliefs, because the beliefs that you are aware of are connected to the beliefs that you're not conscious of. When you tug on the string of a conscious belief, it pulls up from the unconscious mind beliefs related to it that you were formerly unaware of. I think this is a very important point, that the way to get to the unconscious is through conscious beliefs. So all of the work that we do with the beliefs that are conscious helps us ultimately to open up a space for the unconscious beliefs to come forward so that we can begin to see them and heal them. Otherwise, they stay in the unconscious mind. But by working on our conscious beliefs, we are making an intention to heal. And that intention, plus the investigation that we're doing of our conscious beliefs, helps to make room for and invite the subconscious to release the unconscious beliefs into our awareness. The best way to uncover unconscious beliefs is to practice observing your thoughts, as is done in mindfulness and other types of meditation, and then to dig more deeply into the limiting beliefs that you're aware of through the technique of spiritual inquiry. This investigation is bound to expose some beliefs that you didn't know were there. In this way, a complex of beliefs that uphold each other, including some unconscious ones, is likely to be revealed. Once this complex of beliefs is sufficiently seen as being untrue, those beliefs lose their power to fool you. Once you've seen through an illusion, as in a magic trick, you can no longer be fooled by it. So I want to emphasize that it is simply awareness that heals emotions and heals thoughts. It's seeing the truth about the emotions and about the thoughts behind the emotions that heals the emotional complexes. Simply awareness. Being aware of the beliefs. Being aware of the feelings. That's what heals. It's not such a difficult prescription. Let's take another common belief that holds people back. I'm not lovable. Other ways this belief might be stated are, other people don't like me. I don't like myself. I'm not good enough to be loved. This belief becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in the following way. If you don't perceive yourself as lovable, or if you don't like yourself, you feel bad inside. You are living in a negative internal climate, which feels heavy, separate from others, sad, and possibly angry and resentful. Envy and jealousy are also probably present at times. Such a negative emotional climate makes you feel dark, heavy, negative, and needy, like a black hole. It also affects how you appear to others. You don't smile much, you don't make eye contact, and you keep to yourself. It's like being painted black and makes you almost invisible to others. If you feel this way inside, others are also likely to sense this about you. If others don't pick up on how you feel by how you appear, then how you feel is likely to be revealed by what you say. You may complain, disparage yourself, judge and gossip about others, play the victim, or drain others with your neediness. You may not think you are self-centered or self-absorbed, but such a negative internal climate keeps you focused on yourself, your needs, your desires, and what you lack. A negative internal climate keeps you spinning around in your illusory mental reality, the ego's world, trying to fix the way you feel, not realizing that the ways the ego comes up with to fix you won't help. Meanwhile, you aren't very aware of what is actually happening in reality, including possible opportunities or any love and support that may be coming your way. When you're focused on yourself, you aren't able to be present or loving to others or available to help them. If you were, that would be an attractive, not to mention pleasant, state. When you aren't open and loving to others, then you won't be perceived as very likable. And if you want their love or anything else from them, they often sense this and move away. The prophecy that others don't love you becomes fulfilled, because the you that your internal state has created is not very lovable. And of course, it is also difficult for you to love yourself when you feel this way, no matter how many affirmations you may repeat. So a negative internal state is a state of self-absorption. People who are depressed, for instance, are self-absorbed. They're interested only in how they feel, and their failures, and their resentment, and their mistakes, and how they see the world, and how they see themselves. They aren't interested in others. They aren't interested in life. So the egoic state of mind, in its most negative form, is extremely self-absorbed. And that is a very painful state, to be thinking about me, myself, and I. But that is the egoic state of consciousness that many people find themselves caught in. And unfortunately, the negative internal environment that it creates does not help them to create a more positive reality externally. Other people are put off by their negativity. They aren't inclined to help them. When you're in a negative state, you are also not inclined to see or notice opportunities or notice any love that is coming towards you. You're not able to receive it. Even when you don't love yourself, you can have compassion for yourself, which is the beginning of loving yourself and getting in touch with your inner light and letting that shine. Compassion for yourself is the bridge that takes you out of the grip of your personal illusory reality into reality, because compassion is a quality of your true nature. This is a catch-22, though, isn't it? How do you find compassion for yourself in your inner darkness? Well, you have to look for it. That's all, really. It is there. Compassion is the key. Once you know that it is the key, then feeling loving toward yourself is just a matter of using the key. But that does take a willingness to see the truth about why you don't love yourself, and a willingness to use the key. So compassion is a quality of your true nature, and consequently, it's always available. It's always there, but you have to turn to it. You have to pick it up, in a sense, and put it on. You have to let yourself experience it. It is not that hard to have compassion for yourself. You have compassion all the time for other people. So give yourself the compassion that you do have, and that will help you overcome any inner negativity. This compassion is not a poor me. That's self-pity. This compassion is a clear seeing that you are suffering from the disease, so to speak, that all of humanity is suffering from, the egoic mind. All of humanity is programmed with thoughts that cause them to suffer. You aren't singled out in this. Everyone has the same disease. People who've had a dysfunctional upbringing have more negativity than people who haven't. But the disease is the same, and the cure is the same. Compassion is one of the cures. So we have two important qualities of your true self that are the cures for the inner emotional negative climate: awareness and compassion. Here are a few more simple examples of how beliefs about yourself become self-fulfilling prophecies. If, for example, your self-image is that you don't like to exercise, or that you don't like to eat right, or that you're someone who adores food, your unconscious mind will do its best to uphold that self-image. One of the ways it does this is through stories. Whenever the subject of exercise or eating comes up, you tell others the story of how you don't like to exercise, how you don't like to eat right, or how much you adore food. If you don't continue to live up to that image, that will make you wrong, and the ego doesn't like to be wrong. So if someone says, "Want to go on a hike?" you check with your self-image, see that hiking doesn't fit your self-image, and reply, "No thanks, I don't like to hike." Or if someone says, "I feel so much better after changing my diet, you should try it too," you reply, "No thanks, I don't like eating healthy food." Or, "I love food too much to do that." Then you continue to live your life in keeping with your self-image. You don't exercise, you don't eat healthy food, or you put food at the center of the universe. Because if you didn't, you wouldn't be being true to yourself, true to your self-image. In this way, you become what you believe yourself to be, and what you tell others about yourself. By closing off opportunities to experience yourself differently, your beliefs about yourself are proven true and fortified. This is such a good point. I'm going to reread these last sentences. In this way, you become what you believe yourself to be and what you tell others about yourself. By closing off opportunities to experience yourself differently, your beliefs about yourself are proven true and fortified. This is how we create and maintain our self-images, isn't it? We repeat our stories about ourselves to other people, and then we behave accordingly and don't even consider doing something outside of our self-image. Let's look at one more example of a belief about yourself that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy and limits your possibilities by creating a distorted, illusory personal reality. The belief is, I'm a failure. This belief could be stated in a number of different ways. I don't believe in myself. I won't succeed at anything I try. I'm not as good as others, so there's no use trying. I always screw up. I'm not like others. Nothing I do works. There's no hope for me. As you can imagine, this is a very debilitating belief. After all, life is made up of moments of doing or attempting to do one thing and then another, often something you've never done before. When you believe you are a failure, then everything you do becomes a test of your self-worth. I'm going to just repeat that sentence. When you believe you are a failure, then everything you do becomes a test of your self-worth. That sounds exhausting. It is painful to take life this personally, and if you believe you're bound for defeat, it would be easy to conclude, what's the use of living? And many feel this way. The belief that you are a failure becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy for a number of reasons. First of all, this belief creates a negative internal climate that not only feels bad to you, but also feels bad to others and makes you appear unattractive to others. A negative internal climate tends to repel people and opportunities that could smooth your way, just as the belief I'm not lovable does. More importantly, the belief that you are a failure undercuts your motivation and saps your energy, because negative emotions are draining. To succeed, you at least have to try, and usually repeatedly. You have to persevere. If at first you don't succeed, try again, is very sound advice. But unfortunately, those who believe they are a failure often don't even try the first time, much less persevere. One point I want to underline is that negative emotions are draining. I'm not sure that people realize how much they're drained by their emotions, their negative emotions. They take a tremendous amount of energy psychically, but they also take a lot of energy in terms of the stress they cause, which causes you to make mistakes, and then you tend to want to process your emotions with other people, or you dump your emotions on other people, and then you have to deal with that, and that takes even more energy. The amount of time and energy that emotions take becomes really apparent when you stop creating so many negative emotions. As your thought stream becomes clear of negativity, you stop generating so many negative emotions, and you have much more energy to do things. And this also is very attractive, and it opens you up to new possibilities. At this point, it seems important to note that success actually only exists in the ego's illusory reality, because success is a concept. It isn't real. There is no clear definition of success, and there never will be. If you do achieve success, your ego won't let you rest for long before it redefines success. Then you're chasing after success once again. You never attain it for long. This is not to say that you shouldn't try to be successful at what you do, only that you will never be a success or achieve it for long, because your ego constantly redefines what that means. What is important to your soul is evolving by learning, and learning results from so-called failures. Trying and failing, and trying something else and possibly failing, and trying again and succeeding, and then trying something else and failing, is how life naturally unfolds on planet Earth. To your soul, failure is success, because that is how learning happens. So this is a wonderful reframe, and it's the truth, as all reframes are. The truth is failure is success. And the truth is that this is just how life proceeds in our plane of existence. We learn and grow by making mistakes and failing. And so in that sense, there is no such thing as failing. Because if failing naturally leads to learning, how can that be a failure? When you think of yourself as a failure, you are taking life very personally. Failure doesn't exist in reality any more than success does. I'm a failure is the ego taking life personally. With the ego, everything that happens turns into a story about me, when in reality, what happens is just how life is happening. So yes, the stories that our mind tells about me are usually sad stories that make us unhappy, that make us feel small and limited, and prevent us from seeing the possibilities that are out there for us, and sap our energy and courage, and keep us from fulfilling a greater potential. Affirmations are often not enough to transform deeply embedded unconscious beliefs, which need to come to the surface first before they can be transformed. Beliefs are transformed by seeing that they aren't true. You may need to see that a belief isn't true many, many times to become free of it, not just once. You need to do this for as long as a feeling, such as a feeling of being a failure, is experienced. If a negative feeling state is there, then beliefs must be there. If you can become aware of the beliefs behind that feeling state and then investigate them until you uncover the unconscious beliefs that are connected to the conscious ones, then that will release you from the grip of those beliefs and feelings. Of course, part of this investigation is seeing that those beliefs are not true. So this is how feelings are healed. You first become aware of a feeling, and then you begin to investigate it by asking, what did I just say to myself? What did I just believe that caused this feeling? What are the beliefs behind this feeling? And then you investigate each of those beliefs, and you ask, is that true? And you keep investigating it until you see that each of those beliefs is not true. None of your beliefs that create negative feelings are true. They don't tell the whole truth. They are partial truths, and partial truths are lies. So although there may be some truth in a belief that you hold, it is never entirely true. With beliefs such as, I'm a failure, the question needs to be asked, where did this belief come from? It is in your own mind, but where did it originate? Who or what put it in your mind? Can you find the origin of that belief? If you look, you can't. This is equally true of any belief that you hold about yourself. You cannot find the origin of any of your thoughts. You might say that your father put that thought there, or that you put it there, in which case you should be able to remove it. But the truth is, that thought and lots of other ones are just there. Your father might have told you that you were a failure, but he didn't put that thought in your mind. It's just a thought in your mind. And it must have been a thought in your father's mind if he said that to you. Who or what put that thought in your father's mind? So in looking at your thoughts in this way, you can begin to see that your thoughts don't belong to you. They aren't personal. They don't say anything about you. They are just thoughts that are there. Who knows why they're there? They aren't the truth. any more than the thoughts in your father's mind are the truth, or the thoughts in your father's father's mind are the truth. They are the same lies passed on from generation to generation. Where do your thoughts come from? Are your thoughts or anyone else's the truth? Are your thoughts or anyone else's God's thoughts? Do people's minds speak the truth? With even a superficial examination of the voice in your head, it becomes obvious that the voice in your head is not even close to being the voice of God or the truth. The thoughts in your mind are more like the opposite of the truth than the truth. They are more like Satan than like God. So why would you believe such thoughts? The only reason you do is that you were programmed to believe what seem to be your thoughts. But they are not your thoughts. Believing that they are is the foundational lie that makes the illusory reality possible. Those who are successful already believe they are or can be successful, even if they don't appear successful at a particular moment. Believing this keeps them motivated and persisting when things aren't going well. They believe at some point their efforts will lead to success. Who knows when? Those who are successful keep the when open, never concluding that they have failed just because they may be having difficulty. So I'm just going to repeat one of the sentences here. Those who are successful already believe they are or can be successful, even if they don't appear successful at a particular moment. Believing this keeps them motivated and persisting when things aren't going well. Sometimes the only difference between someone who achieves what he or she sets out to do and someone who doesn't is a can-do attitude, which you might call hope. Optimism and hope create a positive internal climate, which leaves the door open to possibilities and makes manifesting those possibilities much more likely. This begs the question, how might you have narrowed down your possibilities unnecessarily simply by believing something wasn't possible? It's not that those who are successful all the time. They're likely to have had many experiences of failure, but they don't define those experiences as such or let those experiences become the belief, I'm a failure. They don't take their so-called failures personally. They don't turn an event into a story about themselves. Only the ego, the great saboteur, does that. Here's how the belief that you are or can be successful becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. This belief creates a positive internal state, which is attractive to others and attracts opportunities. When you believe in yourself, others believe in you, and they naturally want to help or join with you, which makes success more likely and happiness inevitable, even if success is not immediate. Your internal climate is really important. It is like a signal or vibration you send out. Those who resonate with that vibration will be attracted to you, and those who don't resonate with that vibration won't be attracted to you. This means that if you're broadcasting a vibration of limitation, failure, and self-hate, others who resonate to that sad song will gravitate toward you, while those who dance to a happier tune will be repelled. People with similar internal climates flock together and sing the same sad or happy song together, reinforcing each other's internal realities. People live in different realities. Each person is in his or her own illusory reality, surrounded by many who are experiencing a similar illusory reality. And then there are those who live mostly in reality, who have a much better experience of life. This explains to some extent how people can have such divergent views of life. For example, some see people in general as mean, while others see people as nice. As a result, some people don't like people, while others love people. Your beliefs create an internal state, and that results in a particular experience of reality, a particular reality. While a negative internal state is created by spinning around in your thoughts and believing your thoughts, a positive internal state results from simply not being lost in the illusory reality generated by thought. When you are present to reality without thoughts and feelings distorting your experience, your internal state will naturally be positive. So that's all that is necessary, is dropping out of the negative thoughts that create a negative internal state, then you will drop into your natural state, which is naturally positive. Sometimes you might need a bridge of some kind of affirmation or positive thought to get you from a negative thought to the natural state. Positive thoughts, affirmations, reframing, those kinds of thoughts can be really helpful in neutralizing the negativity of the mind. And when that negativity is neutralized, you naturally drop into your natural state, which is positive. So that is how we can use positive thinking and affirmations as a tool to get to the true positive state that is your natural state and is accessible really in any moment. A positive internal state is actually your natural state. Your true nature is content, joyful, loving, compassionate, at peace, and accepting. It is naturally alert to reality and notices and responds to what is actually happening without the usual distortion caused by thoughts and feelings. Your true nature is naturally wise and responsive to life. In any moment, it knows exactly what to do and when to do it. So that is the reward of dropping out of your negative thoughts and into your natural state. It's not just a place where you feel good. It's a place where you are in touch with the wisdom of your divine nature, which will inform you about how to live your life, how to move in this moment. Not letting your thoughts and feelings interfere with your responses to reality doesn't mean you won't use your rational mind when you need it. It's just that people who achieve what they set out to do don't let their egoic thoughts determine their inner climate. They use their mind for what they need it for, and the rest of the time, they're aware of what is being presented in the moment, what is coming out of the flow. The magic of life happens when you're tuned in to the flow, where it's going, and what your particular role in it is. If you're lost in thoughts and feelings, you won't be in the flow, and you won't notice the opportunities that come out of the flow. Your beliefs are not all that is shaping reality. Your beliefs determine your internal reality and affect how you behave, and therefore affect reality to some extent. But something much more mysterious is at the helm of life, and it, grace or thy will, is steering life in a particular direction, which I'm calling the flow. The flow is the direction that life is taking, and the flow is not up to you. You do not control the flow, although you influence it in small ways. However, you do determine your experience of the flow of reality, mostly by choosing what you believe and by choosing to either accept what the flow is bringing or rail against it. When you go with the flow, life feels much easier. When you resist it, life feels especially hard. The egoic state of consciousness is the experience of being upset with the way things are. While the flow is what life feels like when you aren't involved in your ego's beliefs, so-called problems, fears, and likes and dislikes. So this is an excellent definition of the egoic state of consciousness. The egoic state of consciousness is the experience of being upset with the way things are. And so your natural state is just the opposite of that. Your natural state is the experience of saying yes and accepting and allowing the way things are. Sometimes the flow brings success, and sometimes it brings challenges, roadblocks, or what you might call failure. You are not in control of what the flow brings. However, you are in control of whether you're noticing the flow, whether you're paying attention to reality, or whether you're lost in your mental reality. And importantly, you are in control of your attitude toward what life brings. This paragraph made an important point that there are two things that you do control. You control your ability to notice the flow or not. You can be lost in your mental reality, or you can notice what is arising out of the moment in the here and now in reality. So that is one thing you do have control over. You can notice the flow or not. The second thing you have control over is your attitude about what you notice. You have a choice about whether to say yes to it or no to it. It may not always seem like you have a choice because the knee-jerk reaction of the ego is to say no to the way things are. So then you just notice that. You notice how the ego says no to the way things are. And then you go back to noticing what else is coming out of the flow besides the ego's no. And then you can discover your true self's attitude about life. The attitude of your deepest self is one of love, acceptance, joy, awe and wonder. When you turn your attention to that subtle realm of the true self, you will also experience joy, awe, contentment, wonder. So that is the reward for taking control over your attitude, for noticing what's coming out of the flow and saying yes to it. The reward is happiness, peace, contentment, joy. If you can maintain a positive inner climate, that will help you drop into and remain in the flow. Then life will feel much easier, and life's opportunities and support will be more apparent. Doing the work of weeding out or learning to detach from beliefs that create a negative internal climate is so important, since such beliefs are what prevent you from being in the flow and consequently from tapping into the wisdom and resources you need to handle whatever the flow is bringing. So this is the beauty of life, that the flow brings you challenges, but it also brings you the resources to overcome those challenges. But you have to stay in the flow in order to discover and tap into and make use of the resources that are being made available to you by grace. So your true nature, your true self, is always bringing you what you need. But you won't always notice that if you're lost in your thoughts. So the flow will bring you challenges, whether you are lost in your thoughts or not. But you will be much more able to deal with those challenges when you are not lost in your thoughts, and instead you are giving your attention to what's coming out of the flow, because then you will drop into your true nature and have access to the resources of your true nature, the patience, the strength, the courage, the wisdom, the insight to know how to handle any challenge that might be coming out of the flow.
I want to talk a little bit about acceptance, about accepting life as it is, as it shows up. And really what that means is that whatever experience you're having is the right experience because you're having it. But it means more than that. It means that there actually is an intelligence behind all life that is guiding and helping to unfold your evolution in your life. And so the experiences that you have are not random, nonsensical experiences. If you believe that, it doesn't leave you feeling very good about life. So personally, I prefer to believe things that leave me feeling good about life. And I think that's a good choice because what you believe does matter. And if you were able to move out of every single belief you ever have had, then you'd be in a very good space of peace and love. But the truth is that's pretty hard to do. And we all hold unconscious beliefs as well. So, you know, I would give you the instruction to move out of all beliefs because you really don't need them to live life, to move through life. But since we do all have them to one extent or another, and to one extent or another we pay attention to them, it's good to be aware of your beliefs. It's really important to be aware of your beliefs because they determine your experience of life and your experience of yourself and your experience of other people. So it's good to be aware of beliefs. And then once you're aware of your beliefs, it's good to ask whether it's serving you, whether it's serving love. And if your belief isn't serving love, what good is it? You didn't need it anyway. If you have a belief that does serve love, well, hang on to that one. That one can stay. I've always looked for beliefs that would give me some peace and happiness and help me to love myself and others. So metaphysical ideas have been helpful to me. And they're helpful to the extent that they allow you to do that. If they don't allow you to do that, if they cause separation or confusion, then throw those beliefs out. I happen to have a belief that whatever we are experiencing is the right experience. And it's not just my belief, of course. That comes down through many traditions, spiritual traditions and teachings, that the truth is that life is good, and whatever we are experiencing is good, can be used for our growth, can be used for our evolution. And in fact, I don't think we can really make a mistake in life, because if we follow the ego and we end up suffering, that suffering tends to cause us to reevaluate our choices of following the ego, and then we might not make that choice anymore. So was that choice a mistake? No, it wasn't a mistake. It was a choice that you, in a sense, had to do because of your conditioning that led you then to understand that you didn't need that belief or that thought. So then you can become free of that. And life is so benevolent that it gives us feedback about our choices. And when we go in the direction of love, we feel good. When we go in the direction of separation, judgment, hatred, we don't feel good. And we're not stupid, right? It's built into us as human beings to go towards what feels good and to go away from what feels bad. That was the genius, the beauty, the grace that is given to the human animal. We have this mechanism, this self-correcting device within us that eventually takes us home if we follow those breadcrumbs of love and don't get sidetracked by egoic kinds of misunderstandings. Of course, it's okay to get sidetracked by those too. So it's all good. It truly is. It truly is all good. So a lot of you are having experiences that are quite difficult, that are challenging. You're in transitions in your life. Things are changing. So it's really helpful, especially in those times, to say, well, this must be the right experience. This must be the right experience. And it's okay if you don't know why it's the right experience. It's very possible, very likely, that you won't know why whatever you're experiencing is the right experience. And in fact, knowing why sometimes doesn't matter. And sometimes we get awfully caught up in trying to know why and figure it out as if that somehow is going to make it all better. Sometimes it helps, sometimes insight helps. But you can just go straight to the place of seeing, well, this must be okay for me. This must be more than okay for me. This must be what's evolving me now, what I'm growing from, what I'm learning from. We always have a choice to take the path of least resistance, which is anger and complaint and resentment and jealousy or any of the negative range of emotions that the ego wants to go to in difficult situations. It wants to blame other people. It wants to hate other people. It wants to feel superior. It wants to feel right more than it wants love. So life has a beautiful way of evolving us. In every moment we can look and say, okay, this is what is being dealt right now. This is the experience I'm having. How can I make the best of it? If you're going to bring some ideas to it, some understanding to it, some beliefs to it, bring some ones that put that experience in a really big frame that allows you to just relax and see, yes, even this too, even this is okay. Even this I can manage. Even this I can grow from. Even this I can navigate. And if you find yourself falling into the ideas and beliefs that say, no, I can't, it's hopeless, it's too hard, it's too difficult, this shouldn't be happening, just take a look at how that makes you feel. And why would you make yourself feel that way? Why would you do that to yourself? You would only do that to yourself if you are unconscious of what you're doing to yourself. But you're all too conscious. You're all too conscious. You can bring this awareness that you are, this awareness to whatever you're experiencing, and see what your ideas, your beliefs are contributing to the experience, the pure, raw experience that you're having in life. Are your beliefs and thoughts helping it along? Are they helping you to move through that experience, or are they hindering it, and are they causing you suffering? Because all of you right now are at the place where you can see that. You have enough distance from the egoic mind, or you wouldn't be here. There are a lot of people who don't, who are tossed to and fro by their thoughts and their feelings and their conditioning, and it's so tightly who they are that they really, in a sense, don't have a choice because the conditioning's having its way with them. How wonderful it is when you get to this place where your conditioning doesn't have to be what rules you and that there's some other way to be in this world than just in response to every thought and every feeling that passes. There's another way, and it's so much easier. And it even brings you the things that you truly deeply want. And even some of the things the ego wants too. Those aren't left out. Life happens much, much better from a place of saying yes to whatever you're experiencing. No matter how hard it is, any experience can be moved through. And acceptance doesn't mean you have to love the fact that you're sick or you are having a divorce, or it doesn't mean you have to love the circumstances. Of course, nobody loves the things that people don't love. You know, nobody does. But acceptance doesn't mean that you have to love it. Acceptance means that you accept that it's the experience you're having. You accept that this is what's going on in my life right now. And when you can just say, okay, I surrender this, I guess this is what my life is about right now. And that's only for now. Because acceptance doesn't mean you have to accept something forever and ever and ever and ever, because nothing ever lasts forever. All you have to do is accept what is right now in this moment. And you can be pretty sure that things are going to move on and shift and change.